you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Fandom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zachern, the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and I'm flying solo on this episode because it's a little bit of a different, kind of episode. So I'll give a little context. A few months ago, I interviewed Taron Killam, the former SNL star. He's got an upcoming sitcom called Single Parents. On ABC, I was doing this series where, and I'm still working on it, but this series where I interview comedians and very funny people about geek stuff, which is like both, it was really like an excuse for me to talk to comedy people because I love comedy and to make it work for sci-fi, and also because, you know, a lot of comedy people are big geeks. And Taron Killam is a huge one. He's written a comic book before, and he is just super into Marvel and all those awesome things. So His publicist recommended him for it, and it was a perfect fit. And basically, I held the interview for a few months because we were going to release it closer to when his new show came out. And so that was like in July or something like that. And now it's September, and his show is coming out pretty soon. And so I went back to listen to the interview so I could publish it as a print interview. And I realized, you know what? This is like a 25-minute long talk, and it's really good, and he's really funny and really smart. And so I want to use it as a podcast, because why not have him tell the stories instead of having people read them? You know, the audio on it is not the world's best, but I said, you know what, you know, because I did it over the phone, and you know, the audio is not the best, I was just using a regular recorder. And so, you know, I've gone through it, and there's a few little bits I took out, the you know, the bleeps and bloops, or you know, me weirdly having the phone against my ear, and I don't know what I was doing. I know it was late in the day, and right before I actually recorded another Fandom Files podcast. Anyways, we worked on the audio a little bit, and Taron, through his publicist, was very cool about letting us use it as a podcast. So that is this week. The episode this week, we'll go back to like a regular show, if we even really, I mean, it's hard to describe our show having any kind of regular episodes, but we'll go back to, you know, Emily and I in studio next week. But I wanted to give the world this gift of Taron Killam being super funny about geeky stuff. And so, yeah, listen to that. Taron's show, Single Parents, debuts on, I think it is September 26th. That's a Wednesday. So you have a few weeks to get ready for that. And I think after listening to this interview, you're going to be like, yeah, I should watch that show because he's really funny and likes the same stuff I like. So, yeah, enjoy it.
Very well, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, no, thanks for doing this. I'm excited to set up the chat.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so basically what I've been doing lately is talking to people who are funny, whether they're comedians or comedic actors and whatnot. Like, I know you wrote the comic book, which I've read, and I'm wondering, and I also read it, I see I do my prep, you said you loved the Chris Claremont and Jim Lee X-Men run. When you were a kid.
Yeah, very much so. So yeah, that was incredibly influential in terms of reading, you know, going issue to issue. That's really what inspired me to start collecting on my own, and then exploring different titles from there. But you know, I came to it through the animated series first.
Yeah.
So then went back and found that issue that, you know, I think there was like four alts, double widespread fold-out cover, you know, all the X-Men surrounding Magneto. I always liked a team, like in terms of comics of it all. I always liked, I think what drew me to the X-Men specifically, because the two big titles I read predominantly were X-Men and Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked Spider-Man because I felt like I was Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And I liked X-Men because when you have a team like that and you have, you know, these different characters, they each represent a different personality, you know, or a different sort of archetype within either your social setting or within yourself. And I was a big Gambit guy.
Ah, interesting. What Gambit?
Because, you know, he's a scoundrel. He's a charming rogue scoundrel who, you know, who just kind of doesn't necessarily play well with others. And I always liked that sort of lone wolf element, and Wolverine was always too angry.
Yeah.
Like Gambit always had a better sense of humor about him, you know?
That's fair, yeah. I feel like every kid loved Wolverine, but he was always angry, and then Cyclops was kind of a dink, like a real square.
Yeah, he was. He's a full bummer.
Yeah, so that's why I couldn't get behind Cyclops. I was like, you know what, I get your leader, but... All right, you know, chill out.
I know, what a Boy Scout.
that's how I felt about him. So you were also into Spider-Man, which, you know, I think every kid loved.
Yeah, Spider-Man just felt like it was me, you know, because Peter Parker was always very funny and you know, cracking wise while kicking butt. And I was always very small growing up, too. Mm-hmm. I'm 6'1 now, but I didn't have a growth spurt till like, end of my junior year of high school. So being that little, you know, being the underdog, being the small, unassuming dork was very relatable.
Yeah, I was the same way. I didn't grow until, like, late high school.
I find it still defines my personality, don't
sure.
you?
Oh, yeah. No, I still feel like I'm 4'10".
Yeah.
I totally... Were you also a geek? Were you, like, into science? Or that? I mean, I wasn't, but I love Spider-Man.
I was decent math. My nerddom was like sort of the musical theater world of it all.
Right, so you're definitely a nerd.
Big time nerd.
You know, so, I mean, the book you did was more of a James Bond spoof. Were you a big Bond guy?
Yeah. Yeah, my mom really loved the Connery Bonds and bought those, you know, that VHS collection early on when it was released. And so I remember, you know, watching Dr. No and Goldfinger from you know, as early as I could remember. It was just a concept that made me laugh, but I also kind of couldn't believe had never really been explored. Uh-huh. You know, just the fact that every James Bond adventure ends with him and, you know, the femme fatale or female agent of the moment stranded on a beach, and we never sort of see the repercussions of that.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, they couldn't text back then, so it made it easier.
That's right, exactly. you could, if you were a secret agent, it was very easy to shrug off child support.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't keep up with you. You know, you could just disappear.
Change your name, change your face.
Yeah, so how long were you carrying around that idea with you? I mean, if, you know, you were a kid when you started thinking about the eyes bomb.
Yeah, I think I probably, like, had it brewing before I actually, like, sort of executed on the idea for about 6 or 7 years. You know, a couple of years after its first inception, went to Mark Andreyko, who I ended up writing the comic book with, and was like, have this idea, and I think it could be really fun in comic format, because as I sort of expanded my comic book purchasing and reading, I also really loved detective comics, and I loved, you know, old spy comics as well. And he just really was incredibly supportive of that idea, and he's like, "You have to do that." And mm-hmm. Once I found the means, I kind of just made it a reality.
Which comics do you read now? What are your books?
Right now, I'm going back, and I'm reading a lot of old Hulk.
Okay.
Like 90 to 94 Hulk. And I had this Fantastic Four crossover where the Fantastic Four, it said, like, the Fantastic Four fight the new Fantastic Four. And the new Fantastic Four was Hulk, Ghost Rider, Wolverine, and I think maybe Doctor Strange. I don't know why I can't remember who the fourth one was. I just loved that idea. It was sort of the first time I was able to grasp the crossover of titles mm-hmm. in that way. It was when Bruce Banner's intellect was still ever present while he remained in Hulk form.
Okay.
So I've been going back and reading that, and it's pretty fun. It's sort of in a lot of the colloquialisms and stuff and references It was just a reference in an issue that was like, oh, I feel like Al Gore debating Ross Perot. It like immediately dated itself. But the newer titles that are like just coming up, I've been enjoying the New 52, and in particular the Batman title. I've been keeping up on Saga. I really like Saga a lot. I will go back to things frequently too. Like my favorite series ever is Why the Last Man.
Right. Yeah. Fine. Keep on.
Yeah, and so they say that they're close to launching a TV show. Finally, did you read that announcement?
I think FX.
Maybe gonna play his mom. Yeah, which I cannot wait for.
Who would you want to be in that show?
Like to play?
Yeah.
Well, I, you know, at one point in my life would have liked to have been York, but being that he's the only male character for most of it.
yeah, I guess that's true.
Now there's not a ton of options. I'll be the monkey. I'll be Ampersand.
Yeah. that's funny. So moving on to the Star Wars stuff. Have you seen all the new ones?
Yes.
What have been your thoughts?
I really enjoyed Last Jedi. They literally just released today the We the Star Wars Fans, which is so obnoxious and juvenile. It's so absurd. What's interesting now is how vast the universe, because there was a time in my life where I considered myself, you know, a fully consumed, deep, deep Star Wars fan and, you know, read every Timothy Zahn novel and was, like, you know, caught up on the Jason and Jaina Solo twin adventures of the Jedi Academy book. And now it's so expansive, and since, you know, they relaunched or reset canon once Disney bought Star Wars and what all that nonsense.
Right, right.
It's Legend just like, it doesn't belong to anybody now, and it belongs to, you know, everybody, and it's really, you know, you can pick and choose what works for you,
right.
And this idea that, like, there is only one true way or one true philosophy or one true storyline. Which, like, if any of these quote-unquote Star Wars fans have read any of George Lucas's original treatment for, like,
right.
Mace Windu and The Secret of the Will,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's right. Like, yeah.
There hasn't been a master plan. So I really enjoyed The Last Jedi just because I thought of all the more recent films, it did such a lovely, sort of beautiful job of leaning into the sort of lore and the philosophy of the Force,
mm-hmm.
of balance, of, you know, light and dark coming together, you know, and then just some amazing, beautiful visuals too. You go from Empire Strikes Back, where Luke takes on a single AT-AT by himself,
right.
You know, in his Rebel pilot gear Then you evolve into him standing off against 18 of these new, you know, elephant walkers. It was so much fun. I just really loved it. And I, you know, the throne room lightsaber battle sequence was incredible. And that Laura Dern kamikaze moment was just like one of the greatest just visual sequences in any of the movies, I thought. You know, it was incredibly impactful for me, pun intended.
very good. Yeah, it's funny, like, they released that, and they wanted to remake Last Jedi. Like, you know, you kind of alluded to that also.
They're raising funds, I know.
Have you done it yet?
Go, have at it. No, I myself have not contributed. I also just think that, like, Last Jedi took risks in a way that a Star Wars movie hasn't, you know, in maybe since Empire Strikes Back of Nox, you know, so much of it now is paying off, you know, expectation.
Uh-huh.
Like, that seems to be what the overwhelming fan masses want, are to have their expectations met or satisfied.
Right.
But, like, with Solo, when Darth Maul showed up, like, I was so confused because I haven't watched all of Rebels and kept up with the animation, you know.
Right.
But that's okay because there are people who do have and love those series. So I think everybody just needs to calm down.
I wish. My life would be a lot easier. Given what I do for a living. Oh, God. God, the amount of hate tweets I get for saying that the movie was good is unbelievable. It's exhausting. So you talked about loving the Timothy Zahn novels and, you know, the 90s and stuff. Which ones were you really into?
I forget the title of it. It's the first time we meet Thrawn, and they find all of Palpatine's cloning chambers, and they realize, like, Palpatine has been using clones of himself for, you know, decades now. Like, the Palpatine who died at the end of Jedi in the throne room wasn't even the real Palpatine.
Right.
That was a favorite of mine, although now the title escapes me, but... I was really into the Jedi Academy stuff too, and little Anakin Solo, and the you know, like that was sort of my first intro to Exar Kun, who was somebody that I really liked that character a lot, and I love that those novels got into sort of the legend of Sith and Jedi and the relationships to the Force. I also loved Shadows of the Empire. I really enjoyed that book a lot, and I thought Dash Rendar was such a cool, fun character to read and to also play in video game form.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that was one of my favorite video games.
So good.
Yeah, that was really good. So when you when you started watching the new ones, you didn't really care. I mean, you know, you just wanted to be entertained. You didn't really care that you lost all that canon.
Yeah, I'm still very much a fan and so appreciative to how influential the original trilogy was in my process as creator, storyteller, artist. It really was my first intro into the concept of the hero's journey and epic adventures and sci-fi in general. Yeah, so my expectations weren't low. Certainly less emotional, because the build up to Phantom Menace, like, nothing has been or will ever be as superficially important as the lead up to that movie. I mean, I still have in a box in my garage videotapes of Clips Night and MTV News and, you know, any sort of behind the scenes scoop the first time that they played Duel of the Fates. And the music video, like, I would rush home and I'd, you know, make an appointment and record all that stuff. I was satisfied for it. I saw it 13 times. I saw Phantom Menace 13 times.
Oh, my God.
In the theater. Yeah.
So you liked it.
And then I liked it. And I still like it. It's still my favorite of the prequels. But then, yeah, through debate and through reflection, realized, oh yeah, I guess that isn't super exciting. Trade Federation tariffs, or
yeah,
and then Attack of the Clones was pretty disappointing, and after that one is sort of where I started to become a little disillusioned.
Yeah,
but then you also grow up. I mean, it's an amazing thing that Star Wars has existed for 40 years now, but that's still only half of a human lifespan, so it's relatively new in sort of, you know, the history of humankind, and yet so influential, and people have and can and should age out of it, and then a new generation can come in. And
yeah, I mean, I've never seen a lot of, like, the cartoons, but that's fine. It's for kids, and that's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
You obviously were growing up a huge Marvel fan, still are a huge Marvel fan. Obviously, you have a bit of an entry point into the movies, as you know. And I'm wondering, what's that like for you? Do you ever go to the Marvel movie sets?
Yeah, I've married into it.
Yeah, right.
I've married into the MCU.
How is that, a spectator?
I remember when Toby first told me she was auditioning for the first Avengers, and just that was enough. Be so excited. Yeah. Do you want me to read it with you? Do you want to? We should rehearse again, right? Let's go one more time. What's it gonna wear? It was so exciting, and she actually, like, she snuck me a little illegal photo from the screen test.
Oh shit!
There was a screen test with about four or five other actresses, and as a dutiful, supportive nerd scout, she snuck me a photo of kind of like the test stuff. It was just so cool. So then when she got it, yeah, it was sort of out of this world. First one shot in Albuquerque.
Uh-huh.
And I was on SNL, so I wasn't able to be there for most of it. But I did visit the set. I remember what I saw. I visited the set on a day she wasn't working, and I got to go into the little hut where Black Widow first confronts Banner.
Uh-huh.
And I got to walk around the Helicarrier Bridge, and that was badass.
And, you know, I know security, at least now, is, like, really, really, really tight. Do they even let you look at the...
Yes.
Are you allowed to look at scripts, or is it, not even
the
husband?
It's proactive because the secrecy is equally important to me. So, yes, I want to know, but, like, I will, you know, take it to my grave, whatever I do know. This Infinity War was the first time where she let me know what was going to happen, and then after seeing it, which she hadn't. Because Kobe's tag was sort of like added on later in the schedule.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, I'm there, and like I disappear? Question mark? I was like, oh my God, what does this mean? What does this mean? And even as she told me, you know, I obviously already knew Thanos was the villain, and
right,
kind of put together what was going on. But
Matt's
very long-winded answer to your simple question is, I do get some sneaky peeks, but
awesome.
I'll never tell.
I mean, that would be gold. If you ever need a little extra cash, you could sell that to the internet real quick. Last question for you, because I know you got to go. I'm wondering, so Godzilla and King Kong are going to battle in a movie in a year or two. Who wins, in your opinion?
Finally.
I mean,
I think King Kong wins.
Okay, what's that?
Opposable thumbs.
Oh.
No. I think that Kong as a beast is always about the heart.
Okay.
And Godzilla as a beast is more about the power. So I think Godzilla will bring in dominance, especially, you know, if we're doing fire breath and all the superpowers of it all.
Sure.
But I think ultimately, as an audience, you know, you want to care about your hero, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I think there's more heart. Kong was always about the emotionality of it, about him falling in love and him being wronged and him being a victim. So you inherently want to root for him more, is my take.
Right, okay.
Because in these mashups, you always, you know, just like in Freddy vs. Jason, Jason had a mother who really loved him.
Sure.
And that's very relatable.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
And Freddy's just a bully. Freddy's just a superpowered bully. Stay out of my dreams, you freaking nosy bum.
You know, I feel like this is a very optimistic take on it, given how much evil is winning the world right now.
I know. And so there you go. All the more reason that I go for Kong.
All right, well, I guess
he's the king. And also, we've seen him snap T-Rex jaws. You know what I mean?
That's true,
He's already taken on Big Lizard.
That's very true. I don't know the size discrepancy between that T-Rex and Godzilla, but it's, you know, the precedent has been set.
Yeah. If Godzilla's got a jaw, he's in big trouble.
And he does.
If in the design phase they get rid of his jaw, then maybe it's more of an even fight.
I'm sure they're taking notes right now.
Godzilla, have you never seen him before? Without a jaw.
I just see him trying to eat the entire time. It's unable to.
It's just small. He takes breaks and everything through a straw.
I would love that. If I see it, I'm gonna you'll get total credit for it.
He has a food bag surgically implanted, and that, like, they find that out in the 11th hour. Like, the humans are like, oh my God, Dr. Phil's got a food bag. That's what he's been protecting. We gotta let Kong know.
you're already doing the dub over.
Yeah, exactly. So then Kong's down and out, and you think he can do it, and then he just sneaks in, and he just, like, rips a street lamp out of the sidewalk and punctures Godzilla's feedback.
This will also help. This will also work if Godzilla's diabetic.
Exactly. Right. That's right. So he just overloads him with chocolate.
Yeah. The two weaknesses. All right. Well, I am really hoping we're gonna get the story out this fall, and hopefully they can rewrite the script for.
Have a delicious bring us into the brain trust. Have us punch it up.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We'll get another draft in there. We'll be set. I will let you go now. Thanks so much for doing this. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you, Jordan. Yeah, it was.
Thank you.